Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hey everyone, welcome to this edition of Keep Watch Pass on the It's Not That Bad podcast channel, a proud member of the Pantheon Podcast Network. And I'm not going to say that twice, despite the topic that we're covering today, because we're talking about time travel movies. I didn't want to make you feel like you went into a time travel and just repeated myself, because that would just be bad. That would just be bad intro, bad host. Don't do that. But here to join me for time travel movies, the one and only Lau Robichaud from AM 640 Toronto. Lau, welcome back to the show. How are you doing, man?
Doing just great. Happy to be here, obviously. Anytime you ask me to be on, I'm always happy to do it, but
I just have to stop getting Jeffrey Wright's voice in my head as the watcher. Time. Reality. And of course, I'm a Doctor Who fan, so this is just literally like, This is candy for me. As soon as you said time travel movies, like, ooh, I can't talk Doctor Who. That's a TV show. It's not a movie. Tab. Okay.
I was wondering, because I figured you would bring one of the Doctor Who TV special movies to the table. I was thinking one of those would be on the list.
I mean, I could have gone with Doctor Who and the Daleks, which, of course, was an actual film that they had done way back in the day. But I figured, you know what? It's a TV series. I'm going to stick to the movies, because that's what we do here. We stick to the movies. But I'd be lying if I said I wasn't excited for Shudigatwa as the 15th Doctor. So I'm all set.
It's going to be a completely different take, especially from the trailers. It looks like it's going to be much different from what we've got before. And even the last two Doctors were incredibly different from each other. Like Capaldi was a huge leap away from his proceeding. Every single time they would do really well of differentiating, but keeping enough the same to bring the fans back, which it's after 60 years. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, Capaldi was more a throwback to a cross between William Hartnell and John Pertwee. And I really enjoyed Jodie Whittaker. She didn't have the best showrunner working with them, but I liked her Doctor. I thought she did very well. But now we got Shudigatwa, and I have a feeling he's going to bring a lot of that Matt Smith energy to the role. So, yeah.
I was thinking that, too. The Christopher Eccleston to David Tennant, Matt Smith era, where he was a little more goofy. I think you're going to see a bit more of that with this one.
But the thing is, Matt Smith could go from goofy to dead serious in about 0.2 seconds. So we're hoping that Shudigatwa does the same thing. But I think he will. I think he can pull it off. I'm looking forward to his run. But now we're going to talk about time travel movies. So, Lau, I'm going to toss this one over to you. What is your keep time travel film?
My keep time travel film might take a few people by surprise, because it is not, I wouldn't say it's not well known, but I would say it's one of the least discussed Disney movies out there. I think this is one of the most underrated animated things Disney has ever done. And it came out in a time when I was the target demographic for Disney. And I just happened to grow up in a time when Disney had a rocky period, early 2000s. Was very hit and miss. For every Emperor's New Groove, you had two that were stinkers. But one that wasn't, and that is incredible, is Meet the Robinsons. And that is my keep time travel movie. Having a kid growing up not really feeling like he's fitting in. Coming back from the future, he gets whisked away by this time traveler to the far-flung future and has to meet this crazy family. And of course, at the end, there's a twist that I won't spoil, but the gut punch of that twist and the way it all ties together at the end is one of the most cool and understated uses of time travel in any movie. I think it's beautiful. It's a great family story. It's hilarious. Has a great Disney villain that's also underrated in the Bowler Hat Man. I love Meet the Robinsons.
I'm not going to lie. I have not seen this one. And, you know, I, the father of two kids, have had to watch a few Disney movies in my time. That one never actually came up. I mean, yes, my kids watched Cars. They watched Shrek. They watched Monsters University. Like, they were very into the Pixar side of things. And I think Disney was still able to put out some decent animated films. Meet the Robinsons was just never one that was on any of their radars. So I will admit that I haven't watched it. I'm going to pitch it to the kids and see what they think, because I'd be curious what their take is on it.
You guys will not regret it. It's one of the ones that it gets so emotionally good at the end that parents will enjoy it as well. And Rob Thomas does most of the soundtrack, whom I love.
I'm now trying to picture Matchbox 20 in an emotional time travel Disney film, but hey, if it works, it works.
It's good. It's really good.
My keep film. Oh, cue the quotes, cue the memories. Grab me my boomstick. It's Army of Darkness. This is, to me, the best Evil Dead film, period.
I knew it.
Freaking Bruce Campbell. Like, the goofiest Bruce Campbell that you could possibly imagine. He is brilliant in this. It's fun. This is the most quotable of the Evil Dead films. Like, to me, the first two Evil Dead films don't even matter. Army of Darkness could stand alone on its own and you'd be fine. You would be so good. I mean, the boomstick alone, which of course, you know, some of those quotes would then go on to, you know, something like, you know, Duke Nukem. Right. So, of course, you've got that almost Bruce Campbell-esque kind of character that you're playing along with. But here, oh, it's so good. It's so good. And it's funny as hell.
I have not seen Army of Darkness. I've only seen Evil Dead. We traded one there. We traded two good movies that neither of us have seen. So now I have homework and so do you.
I'm almost disappointed in you, sir.
I know. You know what it is? I never was exposed to them. I've never heard of Army of Darkness or Evil Dead even though I was a big horror buff. I watched all the old Nightmare on Elm Street when I was a kid. I watched all the Friday the 13th, but somehow Evil Dead just stayed out of my radar. And I didn't know when I was younger that was a continuation. I thought Evil Dead was one thing and Army of Darkness was two different things once I did figure out about them. So,
I mean, there's the thing, like anyone who has watched Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness and, you know, all of a sudden going, you know, into that Sam Raimi style directing, you know, you're going to see a lot of those earlier influences in Army of Darkness. And, you know, there's a lot of almost Ray Harryhausen-esque animation in that, like stop motion animation. And it works so well. It works in its goofiness. It works as a horror comedy, and just enjoy the Army of Darkness. Enjoy the Bruce Campbell, because you can't not enjoy Bruce Campbell. Anything he's in, it's freaking Bruce Campbell. Pizza it's Papa. True. Pizza Papa for the win.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
I have two movies listed down for my watch film. And I wasn't going to make a choice until I sat down and it was time to record. And I'm going to go with the second one. I'm going to go with Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. We're talking classic Kirk, Spock, McCoy, Bones, Scotty, going back in time to get a humpback whale, because the humpback whales are extinct at the time when this monolithic type, you know, being shows up near Earth and starts affecting the weather and starts tearing the Earth apart. They recognize that the sounds that it's making is the same as that of a humpback whale, but of course there's no humpback whales in the present, or at least in Star Trek present. So they go back to the past, and this is the funniest Star Trek film ever. It's well directed. If I remember correctly, this one was directed by Leonard Nimoy. It knows exactly what it is. It's not goofy funny either. Like, it's smart funny, and it's very much plays on that fish out of water kind of comedy. It's honestly, there's a reason why the even number Star Trek curse, if you will, or reverse curse. So it's been the odd number Star Trek films that have the curse. The even numbers are the excellent Star Trek films. Star Trek IV definitely falls into that even number greatness. Voyage Home, that's my pick.
I've heard that from so many people, that the even Star Trek movies are the ones you want to see. Like, that's the easy viewing guide. Just go with the ones with even numbers.
Well, I mean, if you go, and we're going right back to the beginning, all right? So Star Trek, the motion picture, as much as I like Star Trek, and I watched it growing up, I watched it, you know, through high school, still watch it today, it's a boring film. It really is. You know, to steal a line from, I think it was Honest Trailers or CinemaSins, one of the two, but it's basically 2 hours, which about 45 minutes of it is spaceship porn. That's basically what it is. Like, you know, big, long, epic, sweeping orchestral shots of the Enterprise, and it's nothing happening. And the acting is so stale, and it's just, oh, it's meh. And then you got Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
Which is the best one.
Oh, absolutely. I would give that a 1 and 1A situation, and I'll get to that one in a little bit. Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, it's okay. I would say it's probably the best odd number film, but you're really, and I hate the, you know, I like this show, grading on a curve. It really is the best of the worst. Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, ton of fun. Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, won the Razzie for worst film of the year that year. That's all I gotta say.
Which is about to say, which is the point in itself. That's all.
Yeah.
Laid it out.
Yeah. Kirk and the Enterprise go to the end of the universe to find God. That's all you got to know. All right. Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. Brilliant. Freaking brilliant. Star Trek Generations. Meh. Just meh. Star Trek First Contact. This is where the argument comes as to what the best Star Trek film is. Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, or Star Trek First Contact. That one actually directed by Jonathan Frakes.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yep. And it's good. It's so good.
I've only seen the motion picture in Wrath of Khan. So.
And then you get Star Trek Insurrection, which was okay. I didn't mind it. It's kind of on that Star Trek III kind of level. And then you get Star Trek Nemesis, and that's where people are going to start to sit there and maybe question the even number logic. I still didn't mind Nemesis. I think, you know, if Insurrection and Star Trek III are the best of the odd numbers, maybe Nemesis is the worst of the even numbers, but that's still pretty damn good.
Yeah, it's a good company to be a part of, even if you are in the lower category of it.
All right, so back to you, Lyle. What's your watch film?
My watch film is the one that was almost keep, but I went with watch because this wouldn't be the one that everybody wants to hang up on the wall, watch every day, but it's X-Men Days of Future Past. Mm-hmm. It's one of the best comic book stories ever written in a time when X-Men was so hot, the best comic they had going. You know, Kitty Pryde projecting Wolverine into the 70s to try to stop the assassination of Peter Dinklage. It's amazing. Like, it's so good. All of my favorite X-Men are in it. Everybody acts incredible. From Mystique to Dinklage as Trask. It's almost like Avengers Endgame-esque because you got some people from the X-Men First Class movies and some people from the Fox X-Men trilogy movies together in the same film. Just really, really good. Great story. Probably the best comic book, probably the best Marvel superhero movie that wasn't part of the mainline Avengers family.
I would question that because, I mean, yes, I'm saying Days of Future Past isn't phenomenal and maybe one of the best X-Men films, right up there with X-Men 2, but you could also put Spider-Man 2 into that mix as well, I think.
Oh, yeah, if we're putting them up against that, yeah.
I mean, yeah. The first...
I put them on the same category, though. I love both of those movies probably pretty equally, but I am a huge X-Men mark, so I will say I am biased.
Yeah. I mean, this is a comic book line that was also translated into the original X-Men animated series, which, of course, that's now being celebrated as well with X-Men 97, firing on all cylinders.
Oh,
and if you
man.
Have not watched the new X-Men 97 cartoon series, strap the F in. You are going to have one hell
you
of a
have
time.
No idea what you're getting into until you're on episode 2 and you're waist deep in it. Like, it grabs a hold and does not let go.
For the record, and I put this out on Twitter, so it's not like I'm hiding my thoughts here on this one, but when you get to episode 5, you are talking an Infinity War level ending to an animated show. And as I sat there and I watched this for the first time, like, I was silent. And then the only thing I could say was like, wow.
The final line of dialogue in episode 5, if that doesn't get you, you have no soul.
Yeah, no.
I talked about this at my job at length on the air the other day after the episode aired. We hijacked the airwaves for a moment, and me and one of my other producers, Dave, had to give like a quick 10-minute review, and I am not exaggerating when I say it's Emmy-worthy. I think this show is award-worthy and should get some kind of recognition.
I would be curious, because it is. Like, and the funny thing is, like, you could make an argument for this episode, and I apologize to your listeners, we're kind of diatribing here. We're kind of going off on a slight tangent, but it's still related to X-Men Days of Future Past.
Very much so.
Yeah. But the thing is that the first half of this episode, it just lulls you into this, okay, they're being a little melodramatic. It's still another lovey-dovey story. And if you know, you know. But when you see a scene of Genosha and the Watcher is in the stars... Just know, if the Watcher shows up, it's going down.
Something is about to happen, good, bad, or ugly. And I actually didn't realize the Watcher was there till the second watch through. And that's when I really realized this is just friggin' brilliant. Like, this on all levels. Like,
oh, yeah. No, it's, you have to watch the show. Even if you don't like cartoons, even if you're one of those people who sits there and goes, I'm not going to watch a kid's cartoon. No. This is quality animated television.
And I put it in the same thing as Samurai Jack. It grew with its audience.
Oh, absolutely.
It did the exact same thing Samurai Jack did. It went away for a very long time, and then when it came back, it knew that a lot of the eyes that were going to be on it were the ones that were kids in the beginning, so they had to dial up the maturity to still appease that audience.
In the 90s, it was X-Men, it was Spider-Man, and it was Batman the Animated Series. Those three animated comic book property animated series were firing on all cylinders because of the writing, because of the animation, and because of the storytelling. X-Men 97 has got it again.
And I think, and to tie it all up in a bow, I think Days of Future Past has that same quality to it. It feels like you're watching a very, very good Saturday morning cartoon that's been brought to life.
Yeah.
It's all over the place, but it's still very mature, and there's still very dark parts of that movie. Obviously, the beginning is very dark because they're trying to avert the apocalypse. They're trying to keep the end of the world from happening. And it's very funny in some places, too. Like, Hugh Jackman is Wolverine. He will always be Wolverine. So it's just an amazing movie. I'll put it as my watch because I know not everybody's into superheroes and some people are fatigued, but I almost had that tied for my keep. So
I will say too, and I get not everyone is going to go out and buy a comic book. I get it. I understand. You may think there's a stigma. I say to hell with that, but you may think there's a stigma. I'm not going to judge here, But just know that if you want to enjoy this story, Alex Irvine did a novelization of the Days of Future Past storyline in novel form. So go out, find the book. And if you don't, even if you don't want to buy the book, if you have a library card and you have access to Hoopla, you can get the audiobook. You can borrow it from your library. You're welcome. You're welcome. All right,
support
Lyle.
Support your local library. Support your local library.
Right? Literacy. Yay!
Do it. It's important.
All right, Lyle. It's time for your pass pick.
I feel like I'm going to get in trouble for this one, but my pass is Back to the Future Part 3.
I think if you're going to pick one of the Back to the Future films, 3 is definitely the one that would get the pass.
I am the one that has, I used to love Back to the Future when I was in middle school. I used to love getting box sets, DVD box sets. And one year for Christmas, my dad got me the Back to the Future box set. I wore the first two out. I think I only watched the third one twice. Wild West just doesn't work. The theme doesn't work with the spirit of Back to the Future. When I think of Back to the Future, I think of like a 1980s food court in a mall. Like that's the same, that's the vibe you get, you know, like that almost, I call it Dixie cup art. Like it's very, there's a specific look to it. And to have them in the Wild West, it just doesn't feel right tonally to me. The whole thing is off. The shoehorned love story with Doc, and there's so many other things you could have done with that. Medieval, prehistoric, pirates, whatever. It might have worked, but it just didn't feel right to me.
I'm going to go out on a limb on this one here. Just hear me out. I don't think Back to the Future Part 3 is a bad film. I don't. But I do think it pales in comparison to the other two. So I think Back to the Future Part 3 feels worse because of the direct comparables between 1 and 2. If Back to the Future 3 was a standalone film and Marty and the Doc end up in this DeLorean that goes back to the Western Age and they have to find their way back to the future, if 1 and 2 didn't exist, 3 I don't think gets looked down upon as much as it does.
No, and because 2 was so good. 2 is the time travel thing done right. It's an altered future. Biff's in charge. Like, that's cool. With this one, it's like, oh, Doc retired to a shack in the Old West, and now we had to go back to try to rescue him because he got murdered. They're like, the plot isn't bad, but it is the Wild West for me that ruins it. If they had done the same plot in a different time era, it would have been a little bit better. But I never got it. I did, even when I was a kid and you're supposed to like the more zany things, I was like, nah, this isn't as good as the Biff one.
Yeah, and if memory serves, they filmed 2 and 3 at the same time. So when 2 actually hit the theaters, they had the, you know, to be continued footage ready to go for the credits, which was kind of cool. And it was one of the first times I remember a film actually doing that, like thinking and plotting ahead of everything. So you knew right away that yes, there's a sequel coming. Yes, you got a little taste of it in the theater while you were watching the one that was going to precede it. Like, that was smart filmmaking. I don't think they probably get enough credit for that. And I mean, that without that, the MCU doesn't have things like
post-credit scenes.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I think Back to the Future Part 2 paved the way for what the MCU was able to do by keeping people in their seats and making them watch the credits. Also, stay and watch the credits. Those people put a lot of work into those films.
Yeah, 100%. Those people put just as much, if not more, work into it as the people you see in the movie all the time. Like, but there is, like, when a movie does that well, it's a really good device because it doesn't get done very much. Or it doesn't done well. One of the good examples of it I remember is at the end of Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest. Have you seen this one?
You know what's funny? Pirates of the Caribbean, like that whole series, is a bit of a blind spot for me.
Oh, it's incredible. It's so good. What? All of them are good. Some of them are not as good, but it's kind of like the Star Trek movies or even the bad ones. You'll still like them. But at the end of the second one, Barbossa, who was killed in the first one, spoiler alert for a movie that's like 20 years old, but Barbossa comes down and like it's a big introduction of there's definitely another movie because the whole thing is who we send in after him. And then Barbossa comes down the stairs having been revived by this swamp witch lady. And that's the big to be continued, basically. And man, that I was like the perfect age for it. I was the target market age for Disney at the time. That hits. Like all of like now I want so much more, but I know I have to wait X amount of time for it. It's a really difficult thing to pull off.
All right. I'm just going to read my notes, what I wrote for this film, and then I'm going to let you know what the film was. So here's my thoughts on this film. This is quoting from what I've written down here. No. I'm talking about 2023's The Flash. Could not stand this film at all. At all. And I feel kind of bad because this was supposed to be like, everyone's supposed to be so hyped. Michael Keaton as Batman is back. Hey, that's awesome. Sasha Kale is Supergirl. Cool. All right. This is going to be awesome. She looks like she's going to be badass in this role. I know that Shazam Fury of the Gods was nominated for worst film of the year at the Razzies this past year. I don't see why. It actually wasn't that bad a film. The Flash, even taking out Ezra Miller's actions outside of the filming of this film, he is annoying as f- both versions of him, one more than the other. The fact that you have one version of him saying, wow, do I really sound like that? Yeah, you do. We don't want to be here for 2 hours to listen to it. Like, you took a character that Grant Gustin did a phenomenal job in building up, what was it, 8 seasons of The Flash?
8 seasons of good television with right? The Flash as well.
Even the weaker episodes, Grant Gustin is still a charm in that role. Ezra Miller took that on it and served it to us on a platter. And said, here, eat this.
With some George Clooney sprinkles.
I didn't even mind that part. I didn't. Like, and the fact that it was just a smile, like, guess what? Could be worse, right? And then we lose the chance to see Michael Keaton again as Batman and the Batgirl. Damn you, David Zaslav.
You knew bringing this up was going to strike a chord with me. You were aware of what this was. You knew this was coming.
Yeah. This is a group therapy session now at this point.
It was the most bittersweet moment because my favorite Batman movies are The Batman, the newest one, and Batman 1989, like kind of the one that started it all, because I don't count Batman the movie, the 1960 movie, no. But I knew almost going into it that this was just going to be, I'm only going to see this for Keaton and the rest of it's going to be terrible because of the Ezra Miller stuff going on, because of the fact that DC did not have any idea what it was doing at the time. Hilariously, pun intended, it's an identity crisis at the time. It was before they had the, you know, okay, here's our direction. Here's who's going to helm it. We know what we're doing. It was just a complete clusterfuck, totally off base with all of it. They took the Flashpoint storyline, which was amazingly written and one of the better things DC has done as a reset or a retcon in the past, like 20 years. It's one of the ones that's most popular and made the most sense, and they just butchered it. And it was such an easy story to tell. It's so easy. You go to a universe where Thomas Wayne was the one that survived instead of Bruce. You get the Flash to fix it. That resets the timeline. You had it all written for you. Why they went off base with so many things and tried to do fan service for movies that shouldn't have even been intertwined with this. Like it was awful. Awful 2.5 hours of my life. Even though I knew it was going to be painful, at least going into this one, I knew it was going to be bad. Going into Batman versus Superman, I didn't know that. So at least going into this, it didn't hurt as bad because I did not have high expectations.
I mean, DC could have still had some juice at this point. And I get that it's hard to get emotionally invested into a franchise that is dying. Just dying. And let's be honest, the DCEU was dying.
Oh, it was on life support even. Like yeah. It was, yeah.
I mean, Shazam Fury of the Gods, okay, I can live with that one. Wonder Woman 84, just pass.
Aquaman 2, oh, hit and miss.
You know that one's going to come around too, right?
Yeah, it's on my list of ones I was going to email you about.
Spoilers! But, yeah. I mean, but Blue Beetle was actually a ton of fun.
That is one that more people should have seen. I think that that kind of got lost in the shuffle a little bit. That had a great cast. That had a lot of actors that you haven't seen in a while that did really, really good. And a great story, too. I love the Blue Beetle hero. I love the power set. He's like a Green Lantern thing. The sky's the limit because the armor can kind of turn into anything. So the stuff you can do there is really fun.
Yeah. Take the power of Green Lantern, the lightness of Shazam, and throw in a little bit of Shang-Chi in that origin story kind of feel. Yeah. And you have actually a very good film. Like, do more of that, DC. I would rather, and just hear me out on this one here, rather than make an expansive, expanded universe where everything ties in everything and you have to be invested in everything, I would rather individualize storylines with different characters, and it's okay to make references to other characters in the world, just like Blue Beetle did. You know?
Yes.
Dude calling Batman a fascist. Like, fine. Batman exists. We don't need everything shoved down our throats. We don't need this convoluted, interconnected world of films that if you missed film 5, you're not going to understand film 17.
I just want my Static Shock movie, DC. Give me my David Diggs as the lead role in a Static Shock movie, please. If you can hear me, do it. And give it to the Blue Beetle people, because that's exactly the kind of tone it should be.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are characters. I mean, yes, for a hot minute, there was like a Wonder Twins movie that was being planned. And then, like, they had announced that, like, KJ Apa was one of the people that was going to be cast in it. And then it got killed because everything was in DC was getting killed. But, I mean, I would rather see smaller stories. Give me characters like Zatanna.
Great, great dig. Great one. Give me a Supernatural movie with Etrigan where the whole thing rhymes. Right? I'd watch that. Like, I would watch a dark fantasy movie where the hero has to speak and rhyme as part of the curse. Come on. Like, that writes itself.
Right? Like, there are many characters that you could put into this. Give me a Huntress story. I'd be fine with a Huntress story. Give me the Question. Give me a film noir take of the Question. Do it in black and white even. Like, really lean into it.
Give me a horror movie with Dead Man where he has to keep repossessing the bodies of murder victims to find out what happened to them.
Right?
There's so much. Give me a good Swamp Thing.
Right? Well, you know what's funny? There was a Swamp Thing movie in the 80s, and I remember watching it, and it actually wasn't that bad.
I've seen it, and it wasn't. It wasn't that bad.
Now, that being said, if I remember correctly, it was either in the late 90s or early 2000s. I think it might have been 2005. There was a Marvel Man-Thing film that was released only in Australia, and it qualifies for the podcast.
Interesting. I've never seen that, but that's definitely something I'd be willing to watch. Because Man-Thing just recently showed up in Marvel again. If you watched, what was it called? The Halloween special they put out.
Yeah, Werewolf by Night.
Werewolf by Night. I watched that a couple of times, both the colored version and the black and white version. That's what you want from comic book movies now. Give me that kind of stuff, because everybody in that movie was a Marvel character, fleshed out backstory and everything, but they're just not the ones you hear about every day. You don't need your Spider-Mans everywhere.
Yeah, that Marvel spotlight style, yeah.
Yeah, give me something like that. Give me the little itty-bitty. That's why I love Moon Knight so much. Because it's this self-contained thing using a character that you never heard of. Very excited for the Blade movie. I think that's going to be the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, like, Aconyte Books is actually doing, like, a bunch of different Marvel books where it's different characters. Like, there's a Silver Sable book. There's a Dazzler book. And they're not interconnected. They're just stories of those characters. But they're not the characters that get played out a lot, really, at all. I mean, people have been wanting, Taylor Swift to be Dazzler in the X-Men for, time immemorial. So maybe it'll happen. By the way, that Man-Thing film features a pre-Jessica Jones era Rachel Taylor.
Really?
Yep.
I did not know that. That's interesting. And she's another really good example of one of the most underrated things Marvel's ever done, and it didn't get the respect it deserves because no one knew the character.
Look,
the Jessica Jones series is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I know. Everyone and their dog was going to sit there and say, you know, Daredevil is the best Netflix Marvel series. No, I'm sorry. Season one of Jessica Jones. Like, absolutely. Because you had, and I'm not trying to take anything away from Vincent D'Onofrio's Kingpin, because, you know, let's call it what it is. Daredevil had some pristine casting and a very good run. David Tennant is Kilgrave.
Just makes your skin crawl at certain times. I didn't think he had that in him. Like, I didn't know that. Like, that's a whole different David Tennant there. Like, watch a couple episodes of his Doctor Who run and then go watch that and tell me that's the same guy. Like,
yeah. Or even go watch him as, like, the broken special investigator in Broadchurch. And then
that's also a great series.
Oh,
also
good. Great series. Just don't watch the American version. Grace Point.
I didn't even know there was an American version
of which that. Also stars David Tennant, but with an American accent.
What?
Yep. Same role, same actor, American accent. But I would watch David Tennant's American accent over The Flash any day.
Yes, any day. I'd watch anything over The Flash any day except for, well, there's a couple, maybe not. But it's a big missed opportunity. It hurts the most because it's a missed opportunity. Knowing what could have been done here, because it's not Michael Keaton's fault. He's still great. He's still funny. He's still his Batman, but he's just in the wrong place.
It's not Michael Shannon's fault. He's still a good Zod. It's not Sasha Kale's fault, because I think
she's a great Supergirl. I think they should keep that casting. If they use that character again, it should still be her. There's a lot going on, but there's really only a couple places you can point to sort of see where the problem is. If you hate the protagonist, it's really hard to get into a movie. And man, Ezra Miller just plays this. You said it, like, he's like an annoying 11-year-old version of The Flash.
Yeah. Like, no, that's not Barry Allen. It's not.
Too many people forget this man's a police investigator.
It's
supposed to be.
It's not even Wally West.
No. Like, it's almost like an impulse or like a Kid Flash or like something like that. Like, he feels like a sidekick.
Yeah. And I, you know what? If they'd gone with a Kid Flash, then maybe. But no,
I don't
just,
know.
Just no.
There's too many moving parts that are moving in the wrong direction in that one.
Okay, we could go on such a comic book diatribe on this, but I think we've settled it enough that The Flash just sucks.
Yes, wholeheartedly sucks.
All right, Lyle, please. It's been a bit now because we got tangenting again. Please remind our listeners what your keep, watch, and pass time travel movies are.
My keep is Meet the Robinsons, and if you're like Jason, you haven't seen it. Do yourself a favor, even if you don't got kids, sit down, watch it. It'll tug at the heartstrings in the right way. And my watch is X-Men Days of Future Past, because X-Men, that's all I got to say. My pass is Back to the Future Part 3, because that's the one time Cowboys didn't work.
All right, and my keep film is Army of Darkness, and if you're like Lyle and you haven't watched this, you need to go and watch it and have yourself a good time. Bring your boomstick. My watch is Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, and my pass is The Flash. Lyle, thank you so much. Please, before we go, remind our listeners where they can hear you out there on the internet and on the interwebs and over the airwaves.
If you want to hear me over the airwaves, check out Let's Talk on AM 640 Toronto with Danny Stover. I'm the content producer there. I do little mini features to kind of piggyback off of Danny's great interviewing work. Check out all the shows on 640 Toronto. All of our hosts are really great, and you'll definitely find something that interests you.
All right, Lyle, thank you so much. And to you, our listeners, thank you. Now, you guys know the drill. If there is a topic that you want us to cover or a film that you want us to cover on It's Not That Bad, hit us up on social media at Not That Badcast or go to our website at notthatbadcast.com. And while you're there, make sure you check out all of our other shows, as we got a ton of content for you guys to listen to, including our music series, There Can Only Be One, and Spin, Shuffle, Skip. Until next time, he's Lyle. I'm Jay. You guys are awesome. This is Keep Watch Pass on the It's Not That Bad podcast channel. A proud member of the Pantheon Podcast Network. Take care.